And I just think that's the future of communication. It's not a whole package by itself. It fits in a comprehensive package where you're communicating using every tool possible to position yourself as an authority and as a trusted expert in a particular right. area. Are you a member of this community in the same way that a lobbyist has to be in the halls of the building? I think that effective communicators in Sacramento have to be part of that capital conversation, which is happening online more and more.
All right. Hello and welcome again to another episode of Sactown Talks. Today we're joined by Russell Lowry himself. Russell, thanks for joining us. Welcome to the program.
It's a pleasure to be here, Jared.
It's always good talking with you. One thing, I love about you is that you're always out there tinkering. You're always trying new things. And, I was just looking on Twitter, you have 4,000 followers now, which is amazing to us who only have, 400. And one thing that I found that cool, a thread you did is kind of on your origin story. And you always like talking to guests about, how they got into the Capitol, how they, started working here. And I think you have one of the coolest origin stories. Can you kind of go ahead and kind of share, with the listeners about how you got to Sacramento and how you started working in politics?
Well, a lot of people passionate about politics and the job in the building, it was a highlight of my life. I love walking into the building and had a lot of pride about being there. But I started as a campaign rat, disrespected little working on campaigns and fundraising mm-hmm. is how I looked at it. But the people that worked in the building were the elite. And so I was working on campaigns and there was a devastating loss for Republicans around the state. They lost 5 seats. The administration switched to Dems, and there were literally hundreds of Republicans that were out of work looking for jobs. And so I was calling around who hadn't staffed up, who didn't have anybody, and the only person I found was Assemblywoman Pat Bates. So I went down to the Capitol basement and I said, I'm here to help Assemblywoman Bates. I need the keys to the office. And they gave me the keys. And it's true. I was there to help her. I didn't have permission.
Right. She didn't know that.
But I knew that I was there to help her. And so I got the keys to the office. I unlocked the door. I had my laptop and a printer. And I drafted a press release and announcing the Assemblywoman swearing in. And everybody was coming in, dropping off their resumes. I alphabetized them and mm-hmm. stacked them and evaluated them. And Ms. Bates came to the office and asked who I was, and I introduced myself and said, hey, I'm just here to help you. And that's how it started. And then she had her kitchen cabinet and they were going through the resumes to schedule interviews. And I said, here, I'm happy to do that. And I called and I scheduled all the interviews. And I scheduled myself last and I knew the people who had interviewed before me, and I knew I was not qualified,
right.
as qualified as those people on any metric that mattered. The kitchen cabinet didn't even bother staying around, but Pat was very gracious, and we went in. We had a great conversation, and she gave me a first shot, for which I'll always be grateful.
Right. And that's kind of, we're coming up on that kind of time of the year where it's at the end of a 2-year session. We're having huge turnover. We're having 30 some members leaving, 30 new members coming. And as I recall, you get a thick packet of staff resumes. Mm-hmm. We're gonna have tons of staff looking for jobs. Kind of, you've been in that position. What would your recommendation be, kind of advice to these staffers coming up, looking for jobs with new members and kind of looking to further their career or just get the foot in the door?
Well, I think every staffer that's looking for a job should reach out. It would be totally fine to, hey, reach out to me on Twitter or send me an email and say, I'm looking for a job. Do you have any tips? Mm-hmm. Networking and that kind of conversation, asking for help is key. It's key to doing the job in reality, but it's also key to getting and sticking around. And COVID has impacted that in some ways, but we're in the people business and we need to connect with people. And that's the best tip I can give is reach out often and get as much advice as possible. Right.
And so, you know, how many years did you spend working as a staffer in the Capitol and kind of what are some of the different positions you had while working in the building?
Over 20 years of different positions, but I was a ledge aide for Assemblywoman Bates. I was chief of staff to Senator Dutton, and I was caucus chief of staff. And I had a variety of different roles based on those different committees, from ledge aide to mm-hmm. ledge director. I had a brief stint as a scheduler, which was a disaster. but it caused me to appreciate how schedulers rule and reign in Sacramento. Don't ever tick off the scheduler should right. be the golden rule. Certainly one of the top 10. But I've had a variety of different roles and I've really enjoyed them all, but probably, you know, negotiating budgets and being with legislative leaders and talking to the governor and really hammering that out with the detailed policy staff was the highlight and something I'll always treasure.
Yeah. You know, Senator Dutton just recently passed away. Mm-hmm. Can you give us kind of some memories you had of working with Senator Dutton, kind of the man he was?
Senator Dutton was a incredible man of integrity and just the epitome of what you want in a public servant, in that he had a background in real estate private equity. He put together real estate and land deals. And he was so meticulous about not mixing business and pleasure that he essentially shut most of that down. He didn't do deals in that way. He had a mirror in his office. And we would look in the mirror, and what he said to me was, we don't ever want to do anything in the office that makes it hard to look in the mirror, because we'll have power for a little while, but I'll have to shave every day.
Right.
And we're not going to do anything that makes it more difficult for me to shave. And to be able to work on big, consequential, multi-billion dollar projects and things with a man of that kind of integrity was, I'll always be grateful for Bob.
Right. Dutton. And what years did you work as a majority, I guess, minority leader?
That was 2009, I believe it was, but it was interesting. The previous Republican leader was Dave Cogdill, and I was very friendly with him. We shared a Christian faith, and I respect and had admired, speaking of integrity, his integrity. But I hated the deal that he cut, and I rallied a lot of information and troops and votes to take him out as leader of someone who I liked very much.
Right.
And he wound up getting the Profile and Courage Award, the JFK Profile and Courage Award. And part of it was because he sacrificed his leadership for what he thought was right. And I loved working on taking him out as Republican leader because I didn't think he'd negotiated a good deal, and I wanted to negotiate a better one, and I put a lot of work into that.
Yeah, you know, that's interesting. You know, we're hearing about kind of like a speakership battles going on right now, but I guess, you know, you don't consider how much involvement staff has in kind of these leadership battles and who prevails. Can you tell us a little bit more about that and kind of how staff are used in kind of these leadership fights?
I'm shocked that people openly talk about a leadership battle. I just the staff and the members set the culture. And this is one of those conversations that that really spotlights for me that I'm past world. My prime. This is a different world.
Right.
I would never disrespect the speaker or leader, by talking about it publicly. Mm-hmm. And as someone who sharpened knives and has taken out leaders, right. You do that privately. I would generally, and I think staff and lobbyists, it just doesn't pay, to even discuss it, because the leader's job is to take and advance the agenda of the members. And if you're part of, even if you're part of electing a new leader, the leader's first job is to get on side with the members. Mm-hmm. And if getting, and what that member who you help take out is mad at you, that might be the only thing they want is to screw you.
Right.
It just doesn't pay. And so for most staff and most lobbyists, it's best to think of leadership battles as member business. Mm-hmm. But I'm not giving anyone that advice because each legislature, and you know this, the members and the staff set the culture and the tone, and lobbyists and advocates and the different people who surround them participate in it. But that 24-year-old legislator that says, I don't care how you did it in the old days,
right.
We're doing it this way now. I don't fight with them about that. I listen to them because how they say it works is how it works. And I need to listen,
right.
And learn.
You know, that's interesting. You know, when you were in the legislature and working for leadership, that was back when, you know, a budget was actually
2009 and 10.
Yeah. Two thirds. And you actually had a give and take. And kind of do a lot of bridge building. Kind of, you know, I guess, how was that done back then, and kind of how has that helped you in kind of, you know, working your business today?
I think it works in largely the same way, in that members are trying to do the right thing. Members are trying to govern, and governing is hard. And if you can help them do that by making connections, by building bridges between people and interest who are trying to do things in order to make the thing work, you can be effective and you can participate in the process. And the fact that it's hard creates the opportunity. You're an attorney, mm-hmm. You're a lawyer. You understand the gaming code as well as anybody, or better than right. anybody in the state. That gives you an edge, that makes you put you in a position to solve a problem. Mm-hmm. Well, if you chose to be obstructive and destructive, get hard to get things done.
Right.
But if the staff and the members who are trying to do things think of you as a resource, and they do, then you can do things effectively for your clients.
Yeah. You know, one of the interesting things that's going on is, you know, you talk to staff and they're always wondering, you know, should they stay in the building? Should they go work for an association? Should they go for a contract firm? Kind of, you jumped out and you just kind of started your own business. and, you know, you didn't really know what you were going to do when you started. You just opened a shingle. Yeah. Can you kind of talk about, you know, how you came out, you opened your own shingle, and kind of what you thought you were going to do, and kind of what you're doing now?
Right. Well, I'd been a lobbyist, so when I left the legislature, I got a job as a PG&E lobbyist, mm-hmm. And I loved it. PG&E and had been on my list of people, of companies that I respected. Kent Kouse was a great lobbyist, and I got to work for him and learn from him, and I have him as a legend in my mind. So I did that for a while, and then it was just different being a corporate lobbyist. It didn't give me the kind of influence over the broad scope of things that were happening
right.
in Sacramento that I thought I wanted. And at the time in utility world, I kind of looked at Kent Kouse and said, those guys are dictating and moving at the highest levels on what's happening in energy policy. And I'm sort of I get to participate, but I'm not driving the show, and everybody kind of knows who they really need to talk to. And I kind of like being in charge.
Right.
And so I left for circumstances where I could be in charge. So fast forward a little bit. And then when I opened my own shop, I had visions of being a lobbyist. And we talked a little bit about how things change, but in influencing, I found that people are changing how they communicate. Younger people are on their phones constantly. I would have meetings and people are scrolling through their phone during a meeting, which would have been unthinkable to me.
Right.
And they didn't mean anything by it. And so just figuring out how people are communicating. And I don't know that the rules have caught up yet, but using digital tools, podcast and infographics and ads and communicating on radio and television and different digital mediums, that you could set the tone and shape the conversation in different ways. And instead of competing against all the lobbyists and folks that I'd worked with, I kind of became a communication tool for those people. And it was, instead of competing against them for lobby clients, I just became a resource for a lot of my friends and different folks in the Capitol.
You know, it's interesting. It was like that 2016 election. Everyone was convinced that Facebook swung the election. And that's kind of when people started talking about social media. But even today, 2022, it seemed like the number one way campaign consultants are saying the best way to win is through the mail. Kind of what are your thoughts on that? And kind of what are you seeing in kind of campaign changes? And kind of why isn't there a bigger move to social media?
I think different consultants have different approaches to it. My target audience, and where I think I do it as well as anybody, is sort of an 8-block radius around the Capitol. If you need to communicate with legislators and regulators and their staffs, we can do that in a very niche way. But on these bigger campaigns in a broad electorate, I still think digital tools should be a bigger part of what more campaigns are doing. If I took a step back and said, before direct mail, it was all TV and radio.
Right.
And that was the thing. And then somebody ran an election and used direct mail and won. And then everybody used direct mail. And I think we're on the cusp of that kind of change now, where people are learning about digital tools and advertising. And as soon as someone runs a digital first campaign and wins, you'll have that same switch that you had for mail. At this point, if both sides are using the same techniques and you've got a tried and true path, and your consultant has won races using these tools in this way, then you're more likely to get one. I had the pleasure to run an initiative, and the client trusted me. And we were able to get a 73% win using primarily digital. And I'm convinced it can be a more efficient tool than some of the mail.
Right.
And I own a mail house. if anybody needs any mail, I will help you and get it out as competitively priced as anybody in town. But if I'm making the decision and I'm helping my clients make those decisions, I'm encouraging more and more digital.
Right. Like, you know, in 2020 with COVID, the world has fundamentally changed, right? People aren't in person as much. And it seems like digital and like email is like the only way to get a hold of people now. Kind of like, what have you seen change during COVID, and kind of how are you adapting to kind of, you know, influencing and doing stuff in this kind of this new age, this new world?
Well, I mean, even this podcast, Sacktown Talks, and I'd been a friend of Scott Lay, may he rest in peace, who had the show before you did, and he and I knew him. I didn't listen to the podcast that much. It was a non thing for me, and then, but he had this audience, and I found people talking about the stuff that he was generating as far as content, and it was part of this capital conversation. And as a lobbyist, and a communicating for clients, you want to be part of the conversation. You still, the lobbyist has to seal the deal and ask for a vote, yes or no. Is at the end of the day, it's 21 votes in the Senate, 41 in the Assembly, and a signature from the governor. And you need that. But a lot of how people approach or you frame or structure an issue or how do people think about it, that happens as just part of that atmosphere, right, the capital conversation. And I found that I could influence that and really outsized influence it because I didn't have a lot of competition for those eyeballs in space. And still today, most of the dollars spent and most of the effort is spent are in more traditional channels, and we've been able to kind of shape the narratives around our client issues in a way that that has been great.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, before COVID, you used to be able to just kind of walk around the halls of the Capitol, you know, go to offices and kind of get a sense of what's going on or and kind of get your message out there. But now, you know, a lot of staff aren't in the office. A lot of the offices are locked. You know, and the staff's emails are full, right? Like you send an email, it might go in the junk. It might take a staff a week to see it. So it's kind of funny talking to some lobbyists and they'll send one email and they'll get mad because they never heard back from the folk. And I was like, you know, you got to send an email every day
right,
to get yours noticed in this pile when you think the staff, you know, might have 1,000 people emailing them. Kind of what are you seeing and kind of what are your advice for folks out there kind of dealing with this new world and kind of how to get your message out, how to effectively lobby in 2022?
Well, I do this directly with clients now, and I have corporate clients and association clients and developers and business owners directly. And my first advice to them is to listen to their lobbyist, because you guys have to deliver the votes and you know the culture of the place. And so my clients will often, I think, spend a lot of time figuring out the words that they want to say, and they agonize over the letter. And the lobbyist is telling me right, that a PDF in Capital World is a hostile act. They don't want you to fill up their right, email with that, your wonderfully worded PDF. And so it's very unlikely that that had any impact. Mm-hmm. And so first thing I do is listen to the lobbyist and what are the communications and channels that work. And so members are on Twitter and Instagram, staff are on TikTok, and they're on their phones all the time. I run ads, and I'll run some really targeted ads, and I know that the members and the staff are in the building, but they're reading the content on their phone.
Right.
I'll send an email and get the data back on it, and people are reading and interacting on their phone. And so why would I not shape communication in the way that the people I'm trying to communicate right, want to hear it? And so I don't think the rules have necessarily caught up to how all the ways that people consume information, to where a call or a meeting or a text is lobbying, but a digital ad or a tweet is not lobbying.
Right.
And so I don't do any lobbying. I don't do any direct members, but I find that by the time my client issues have come up, we've had some fun where during a committee hearing, the questions that are on the members' minds that they're asking participants on both sides, we've helped shape the conversation. Mm-hmm. Lobbyists still have to deliver votes, but we are able to shape the conversation in meaningful ways.
You know, that's funny. You talked about the PDF and the letters. I was just working on an issue that, you know, basically I was said is like, go ahead, send a letter. Like, no one's going to read it, right? Like, just goes down that big hole with everyone right, else who's sending thousands of letters, right? Just gets right, lost. And you used to like hand deliver the letter, right? So you actually, person actually got it. And you knew they'd at least have to glance at it for a second, right? But yet now you don't even,
you don't even know that they glanced at it. You're the most you get is maybe a read receipt. And they hate those too. And so you have to be, you want to win. You want to win for your clients. The issues matter. But I think, how do you define a win? Is it just a yes or a no vote? Or are you the kind of advocate for your issue or cause to where you're shaping the conversation? People think about it the way you want them to think about it. When I think of what that good lobbyist is, we call them a lobbyist because they hung out in the lobby. And that exchange of information among players and staff, you've got to recreate that in some way. It's shocking to me that an association or an interest group with major issues before the Capitol, why there aren't more podcasts. Why are there not? How are people, if that's how people are consuming information, why are people not giving the decision makers information in the format that they want to receive it?
Yeah. You know what I love about a podcast is you can listen to it at like 1.5 or 2x speed and get the same comprehension out of it. So it might be a 20 or 30 minute podcast, but you could listen to it in 15 minutes. And that's what I find interesting, kind of talking with members and other folks, is they're able to digest this information, I guess, in a format while they're driving or walking, which is interesting that, you know, you never thought before.
Well, not to turn the tables. I'm just curious. How long have you been doing Sactown Talks?
I think a little over 2 years. So like March or April of 2020.
So you pivoted when COVID came. You couldn't do what you were doing before. So you're doing something else. How have you noticed any change? Why invest the time in it?
Well, I think it's interesting because, you know, basically, you know, what I do is based on relationships and building relationships and meeting with members and staff. And being able to do this show and not only get to know more about the member personally, but being able to share that with the rest of the community, seeing what these members are working on, what they're interested in, and different interest groups as well, you know, seeing what they're working on, what they're interested in, you know, being able to share that, I think has been really helpful, and kind of gives you a bigger kind of picture of what's going on in Sacramento, basically, than, you know, the few issues you might work. And with that, kind of what are you seeing on your end, you know, with podcasts? Are you seeing other associations or members starting to use this, and kind of why do you think they're so powerful and helpful?
I think the best associations are doing it and more all the time. So I see the Realtors Association. I see the Parole Agents Association. I see the health facilities and different people that are doing podcasts. A real leader in the space I saw was CMTA, and I noticed they had a comms hire that came from a professional media background.
Right. Yeah. Like, and they built Channel
out
3, yeah.
Yeah. And then they built out a whole studio similar to what you've got here and what we were doing at Highview. And I just think that's the future of communication. It's not a whole package by itself. It fits in a comprehensive package where you're communicating using every tool possible to position yourself as an authority and as a trusted expert in a particular area. Are you a member of this community? In the same way that a lobbyist has to be in the halls of the building, I think that effective communicators in Sacramento have to be part of that Capitol conversation, which is happening online more and more.
And, you know, I think something really cool that you do, it's not just the podcast, right? It's the video and clips and how you can use that video and clips and different, you know, channels, different media forms, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Can you kind of talk about that and kind of how you discovered that as a useful tool?
Well, that's a little bit of the secret sauce, but not everybody has time or is going to spend an hour listening to an entire podcast, but they may be standing in line at the grocery store and scroll through it on Facebook and getting client messages in digestible 30-second bites or in video clips that are engaging has been a real game changer. You don't you don't have a comprehensive policy document in a 3-minute video that no one's going to watch, but you can raise an interesting question in a 15 or 30 second video that works. And again, it's the mediums and channels where they are. So, I mean, kicking and screaming, I investigated TikTok.
Yeah.
I didn't like what it revealed about me. What did TikTok think I was interested in? I was not interested in what TikTok. I did a lot of blocking and deleting and a lot of that. But what I found was a medium where people in the Capitol are using it. And so I've had to learn how to shape video in different formats. But Twitter is a place where it's almost political malpractice not to have a presence there. The Capitol staff and political reporters and Capitol conversation is there.
Right.
Have to be there. Similar to Facebook, but less so. Not people are talking, but you can communicate, but it's less of a engagement platform. And then on LinkedIn, you can shape and raise messages. So I look at each platform and I design a communication that's appropriate for that platform and a particular message point. And then again, part of the secret sauce is my client or me or the lobbyist may not be the best messenger.
Right.
And so if I can get the perfect person that the legislator wants to hear from, and they can hear from that person in a venue where they're most likely to engage, that's more likely to be successful. You know, as a lobbyist, maybe the legislature cares about a particular client or you, and they maybe they respond to an environmental group or a labor union,
right,
in a different way. And so you find the right messenger to connect with the right legislator with the right message at the right time. And it's a beautiful thing.
You know, that's interesting. I never thought about TikTok and like Instagram reels. Like, that's what people are scrolling right now. They see the videos. I can just see you now, Russell, just, you know, doing political TikToks and Instagram reels with little dances, people pointing to different, you know, songs playing and different facts.
I'm more of a behind the scenes guy. I'd prefer this sort of stuff on camera is not my role. I'm I'm rarely the best messenger. It's not that I can't help with the message, but I don't have the same relationship with members and with staff. That's why I encourage clients all the time. The reason you hire a lobbyist is because your trust and credibility that you've built with the staff and with the members is gold.
Mm-hmm.
You're carrying the message, but the lobbyist, the members trust you.
Right.
They know that you're going to be here tomorrow. So it's not, you're not going to lie to them today and burn a relationship forever. And that's worth a lot. And so everything I do on digital and social is meant to support the lobby effort. There's no substitute for it. But if the fight really matters, you need every tool in the tool chest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember like years ago, people would like have like phone banks and they would call the offices off, you know, off hook. And, you know, you see today, like there's better ways to do that and get your message across.
Right.
Kind of like digital marketing. A lot of people think it's like hocus pocus, right? It sounds like something that's, you know, from a different world. Can you kind of talk about, you know, digital marketing and kind of how it can be used effectively and kind of getting your messaging out?
Sure. I mean, everyone is trying to communicate and there's different rules for different state agencies and regulations. I'll give you one example is I had a client and they had an audit request, and the audit was blasting a regulator that held life and death over that business's existence.
Mm-hmm.
And so everyone was reticent to bash the regulator with the information that was in the audit report. And so we needed to bring that to the legislators' attention. But the client didn't want to ruin their reputation with their or their relationship with the regulator. And so we were able to take the information, put it into digestible bites, and serve that information up to where it's a big success story. But the legislature met and during the budget subcommittee hearing, grilled the agency on an issue that had been spotlighted in the audit report, and they asked it and framed it in the way that my client wanted it said, without the blowback or harm to their relationship with the regulator. That kind of activity, I just love doing that, and it's entirely possible using digital tools and websites and communication to kind of shape that narrative.
So if, you know, some of our listeners are listening, they want to find out more about you and kind of what you're doing, how can they kind of get a hold of you and kind of follow what you're doing?
Well, the best way, you know, shoot me an email, russell@highviewstrat.com. I'm on Twitter, RussellLowry10, I think is the handle. I'm call, text, email. I'm available those kind of ways, but I love chopping it up and bouncing ideas off people, and I help people all the time. I'm happy to do that. So It's no burden for somebody to reach out.
Right. Well, awesome. Well, thanks for stopping by, Russell, and kind of sharing what you're working on, and look forward to catching up with you in the future.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Thanks, Russell.